Welcome to Managing Hodgkin Lymphoma. My name is Andy Evans. I'm Professor of Medicine and Chief of the Division of Hematology Oncology and Director of the Tufts Cancer Center at Tufts Medical Center in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. I'm going to talk to you today about the management of Hodgkin lymphoma in 2016. An outline is presented here, relatively brief, that will touch on early stage and advanced stage Hodgkin lymphoma and integrate in response-adapted therapy. I'll have a couple slides on elderly or older patients with Hodgkin lymphoma, and then finish with targeted therapy, including a couple slides on biomarkers. But what has changed in the management of Hodgkin lymphoma since 1980? Well, in terms of staging, we certainly do not perform lap splenectomies anymore. It's functional imaging, PET scan, and CT scans. I think most of us will still do bone marrow biopsies, although there's emerging data with certain criteria that we might not do a bone marrow biopsy. We don't use maintenance therapy. We have progressed from MOP, where the standard in most cases is ABVD, although there is consideration for BICOP in certain situations. There's less radiotherapy. There are special or modified treatment regimens for older patients. And we're really, with the hope, moving towards a paradigms of integrating targeted and novel therapeutics. So in terms of early stage disease for Hodgkin lymphoma, in most instances, and certainly in large randomized studies in Europe, there has been divided between early stage favorable and unfavorable, or called intermediate, and where you draw the line, as you can see, between there and advanced stage disease. There is still that line, as I mentioned, mainly for clinical trials. Some clinical trials have lumped both groups of early stage together. If you are going to split them, this is a German Hodgkin study group criteria, where if you have one or more of these, you would fall into the unfavorable or intermediate early stage, such as large, bulky mediastinal mass, extranodal involvement, elevated SED rates, over 50 in the absence or over 30 in the presence of B symptoms, and three or more lymph node regions. And a subtle line there is lymph node regions have varied by study group. So what about the top early stage favorable? This was published in the New England Journal by the German Hodgkin study group, and it was a 2x2 factorial design, with the standard at the time of the study being 4 cycles of ABVD followed by 30 gray of involved field radiotherapy. And you can see different modulation in terms of the chemotherapy as well as decreasing radiation. And the long story short with the study were, in essence, all four groups were overlapping in terms of freedom from treatment failure and overall survival. This was the chemotherapy lines overlapping, as you can see, and in terms of the radiation question, 20 versus 30 gray, no difference. So, and this is all four arms in terms of overall survival. So I would submit that this is an option, not the only option, but an option for patients with early stage favorable Hodgkin lymphoma, 2 cycles of ABVD, and 20 gray of involved field radiotherapy. The successor to HD10 was the HD13 study, as is illustrated here. The goals of this study, it was 4 arms like HD10, but it was attempting to delete or drop chemotherapy from the regimen. What happened early in the study is there was an unexpected increased relapse rate for the arms that did not have dacarbazine in them. So these arms closed early. And it continued on between ABVD and AVD. And this has since been presented. And we have seen that there still is a decline in patients who did not receive bleomycin. There's no difference in overall survival. But there was statistically significant, according to preset criteria, of the freedom from treatment failure. What about the HD14 trial, which was for early stage unfavorable patients? This looked at the standard regimen of ABVD times four cycles, followed by 30 grave involved field to all sites, versus two cycles of escalated BACOP, followed by two cycles of ABVD and involved field radiotherapy. As you can see, there was a difference in freedom from treatment failure without a difference in overall survival. The difference was approximately, as you can see, 7 percentage points in terms of progression-free. And so this was viewed as a positive study and as a standard treatment in Germany. Two cycles of escalated BACOP and two of ABVD. Now, this is not necessarily the standard across the country in the U.S. and other parts of the world. There are still many who would advocate including still just ABVD as a chemotherapy and even others, which I think is an option, to include 4 to 6 cycles of chemotherapy without involved field radiotherapy. So really, the question of inclusion of radiotherapy after chemotherapy has been hotly debated over the last few decades, and it continues to be so. And before I talk about response-adapted studies using early interim PET scan, I did want to set the baseline in terms of what have those studies shown. Well, since year 2000, there have been 4 randomized early-stage studies looking at chemotherapy alone versus chemotherapy plus radiation, otherwise known as combined modality therapy. In all 4 of those, there was an improvement in acute disease control, whether measured by event-free survival or freedom from progression. If you look at those absolute numbers across those studies, it ranged between 3 and 8%. In one study with longer follow-up, although using older radiation techniques, there was improved survival with chemotherapy alone, although most studies have shown similar overall survival. There was a combined meta-analysis done between the NCIC ECOG study and the German Hodgkin study group HD 10 and 11 that put it right in the middle there with a time to treatment progression improvement of 6% with combined modality therapy or a PFS of 3%. So those numbers are important as we look at response-adapted therapy, right between 3 and 8%. So this study really set off a wave of response-adapted therapy studies across the world when it was published looking at interim early PET scan after the second cycle of ABVD, irrespective of your Hassan-Cleaver International Prognostic Score, that the early PET scan results, whether it was positive or negative, predicted in terms of freedom for progression-free survival, as you can see. Now, what is important when interpreting any response-adapted study or when managing patients is how you score the scan. Thankfully, in the lymphoma world, we had harmonization several years ago using what is now called the Deauville criteria, where it is score from 1 to 5, as you can see illustrated here, where 1 is no uptake, 2 is uptake equal to or less than the mediastinum, 3 is uptake greater than the mediastinum, less than the liver, and 4 and 5 are greater than the liver. For most early stage, not all, but most studies have drawn the line between 2 and 3. In other words, if you have uptake greater than the mediastinal blood pool, it is positive. It either has to be equal or less to be considered negative. And this was really to enrich the negative predictive value, because as you draw the line, move the line, it changes your negative and positive predictive value. So 2 studies have been published to date. The first was the ERTC by Raymakers et al., and this included patients ages 15 to 70, and using the ERTC criteria, favorable and unfavorable, and you can see over 1,000 patients were randomized with the different numbers between favorable and unfavorable. What did the favorable study? It was a randomization to 2 different treatment strategies. One was a non-response adapted strategy on the far left for favorable, and the experimental strategy was using a response-adapted strategy. So if the PET scan was negative after 2 cycles, you gave 2 more ABVD and no radiation, whereas if it was positive, you increased escalated therapy to BACOP, followed by involved nodal radiotherapy. For unfavorable, similar, except it was more chemotherapy in the standard arm, 4 ABVD and radiation, and in the experimental arm, 6 cycles for PET negative after 2 cycles, versus you can see it was the same in terms of increasing therapy to 2 escalated BICOM. These predetermined statistics are important. They would allow for a 10% decrease in PFS. You can see the enrollments. And what were the early PET2 negative rates? 86% for favorable, 75% for unfavorable. And at a pre-planned interim analysis, there were much increased relapse rates seen in both arms, in the unfavorable and the favorable. This was not absolute over 10%, but it predicted statistically that it would greatly exceed that. Thus, the null hypothesis of inferiority was rejected, or in other words, there was futility, that it was not non-inferior. And so the study was modified then for all patients to receive radiation. What is similar study, although slightly different design? It was different design that these were mostly more favorable patients. Approximately 3/4 fell into a favorable category, so you could not have B symptoms to enroll on the rapid study. It was a little bit arguably cleaner study from that respect, even though it lumped early and unfavorable and were mostly early favorable, where all patients received 3 cycles of ABVD, and then based on that PET scan, randomized to radiation or no radiation. And what did the results show? This was also a non-inferiority study, and it is important to always look at the per protocol analysis when doing a non-inferiority, which is converse to looking at a intent to treat on superiority. What was shown is, as you can see, that the 3-year progression-free survival was 7% better for patients who still receive radiotherapy. There was no difference in overall survival, but despite this negative PET scan, this acute disease control rate was still increased. When looking at the intent to treat, it was 4%. But as you can see, it still exceeded the 9 inferiority. So officially, by statistics, this was not non-inferior, similar to the ERTC study. So overall, what are my conclusions to these two studies? That interim negative PET has not been proven to be predictive. Predictive meaning you have a result and you know, based on randomized study, that you can make a change, at least for the question asked. And the question asked was, can we see no difference, less than 7 to 10% in progression-free survival without radiation? Of course, we need longer follow-up, especially towards late effects and overall survival. But again, remember, on the earlier studies, the difference was already between 3 and 8%, so this is still falling within that percentage point. Now, this does not mean that all patients should receive radiotherapy. It absolutely still remains an individual choice. Now, what about intensification of therapy? This has not been published yet, but has been presented. This was presented at our recent Lugano meeting, looking at, remember, those patients from the ERTC study who had a positive PET scan went to escalated BICOM. So at the presentation, the progression-free survival, as you can see here, was increased 14 percentage points. What was also interesting, it was not significant at 0.06, but the overall survival at 5 years was increased 7 percentage points. Fairly thought-provoking data. We certainly await the published and final data set, but intriguing data nonetheless. So how do I treat early stage Hodgkin's? Well, it remains individualized. It is not one size fits all. I would submit for younger females, less than age 35, or anybody with significant other risk factors, such as strong family history of arterial disease, and have favorable early stage, I will use 3 to 4 cycles of ABVD without radiation. All others, so slightly older patients, not central chest disease, let's say one site in the neck or one site in the neck and submandibular area, 2 cycles ABVD and 20 gray radiotherapy involved field at this time, as according to HD10. I still treat unfavorable, non-bulky, similar to the NCIC study, with 4 to 6 cycles of ABVD, acknowledging that there still is likely, even an early PET negative, a slight increase in acute relapse rate by anywhere from 4 to 6%. I think, what about end of treatment positive PETs or even interim positive PET? I think we don't know what to do. It'll be very intriguing to see that ERTC data published, and that could represent an option as well, changing or escalating therapy to escalated BIACOP and radiation. Bulky, I think the worldwide standard is still chemotherapy followed by involved field radiotherapy, although some studies have looked at PET scan. There's interesting data from the British Columbia group presented at the recent ASH. Maybe we can avoid radiation. In older patients, I would recommend similar paradigms with the a priori exclusion of bleomycin. I feel that the risks, in particular bleomycin lung toxicity, do not outweigh the benefits of this therapy. What about advanced stage? It's I would say, a little bit cleaner in a way in terms of the treatments. The standard has been, for at least the last decade or so, 6 cycles of ABVD. It was an Italian study where Stanford 5 was inferior, and we know there is good German data looking at intensifying treatment with BIACOP. This was the Stanford 5 overall survival data versus ABVD in the ECOG United States study by Leo Gordon et al. You can see showing 5-year overall survival of 88 and 87%. This did include patients over age 60. If you remove the over 60, that overall survival is actually 93 to 94%. This is the New England Journal published by Volker Diehl showing the improved overall survival for escalated BIACOP versus COP ABV that shifted the paradigm in Germany towards BIACOP. Some of the caveats have been an increase, albeit not huge rate, but an increased risk of second malignancies, in particular leukemia, questions of infertility, avascular necrosis, infections, but also really the dose intensity to that initial study, where the dose intensity of COP-ABV therapy was much longer than BIACOP, and could have that explained some of the difference. Most people nowadays, when we give ABVD, it's full dose, full dose intensity, no delays, irrespective of the neutrophil counts, at least for patients less than age 60 and 65. So we give ABVD in a much different fashion nowadays. What about response-adapted therapy for advanced stage disease? Well, there have been several studies that should be published soon. They've been presented several times. Most of these studies have drawn the line lower, so between 3 and 4 representing positive. In other words, the uptake on visual interpretation had to be greater than the liver to be considered positive. This increases your positive predictive value. This should be published very soon in a high-impact journal, the U.S. Phase 2 prospective study, where patients had therapy escalated to BIACOP who had a positive PET scan after 2 cycles, and it was not randomized, but you can see at least compared to historical controls, a 2-year survival rate over 60%. So should this be the standard of care? I'm doing it on patients. We don't have randomized data to support it, but I would say it is the best available data. The other caveat I would say is always, of course, to look at the PET scan and understand that this is truly a Deauville 4 or 5 before escalating. What about randomized data in the advanced stage space? This is from Peter Johnson, also presented at Lugano. It has not been published yet, but they looked at diminishing therapy for an early PET negative scan after the second cycle of ABVD, as you can see on the right, and it randomized continuing ABVD versus deleting or dropping the bleomycin. All patients with a positive PET scan had therapy escalated. Primary endpoint was PFS for the PET negative, and as you can see here, either on intent to treat or per protocol analysis, really was no difference. So I think this would be, albeit someone could say minor, but I would say a paradigm and a change in standard of care that at least for negative PET scan for advanced stage patients, we would remove or delete bleomycin from future treatments. I had mentioned older patients, and that's been historically defined as over age 60. For Hodgkin's disease, that's been reported for over 30 years as an issue. We looked at this data recently from the aforementioned ECOG 2496 advanced stage study, and still really a significant discrepancy in failure-free survival and overall survival, as you can see from the tables two below, that maybe not as bad as in the 20th century, but still, even with 21st century ABVD therapy, you can see quite a significant drop-off. Why is that? Is it tolerability? It's probably part of it. Is it a different disease? You see more mixed cellularity? It's probably a little bit of both. So we know it's suboptimal, it's toxicity, there's even treatment-related mortality. It was almost 10% treatment-related mortality of older patients in this ECOG study, and not just bleomycin lung, also sepsis, etc. There have been some phase two studies conducted in Europe that have looked at unique regimens, even a publication using CHOP. Off study, I'll typically use AVD without bleomycin, but we certainly need more prospective studies in this patient population, including incorporation of comorbidities and ADLs, etc. What about novel targeted therapies? Thankfully, there are a number that are actively being integrated into treatment paradigms in Hodgkin lymphoma. The leader of the pack is brentuximab vedotin, the antibody-drug conjugate, quickly followed by checkpoint inhibitors, in particular PD-1 inhibitors, as well as others, as you can see here listed on this slide. Brentuximab vedotin is an antibody-drug conjugate, CD30, conjugated to monomethyl auristatin E, or MMAE, becomes internalized and in an acidic environment, cleaves a protease and releases the chemotherapy. This is now FDA approved for relapse refractory Hodgkin lymphoma, as well as maintenance therapy after autologous transplant for high-risk Hodgkin lymphoma. And it is also, as the next slide shows, that this has completed accrual, and we are anxiously awaiting this data, of a frontline randomized study of ABVD versus brentuximab vedotin and AVD. Importantly, brentuximab vedotin should never be utilized in conjunction with bleomycin, as there is untoward pulmonary side effects. What about elderly? This was recently published, a single-arm, open-label phase 2 study using brentuximab vedotin. You can see an older patient population of 78 years. Decent response rate and CR rate. There was neurotoxicity, which is important to understand. And you can see the PFS rate. I would maybe as good as the E2496. But interestingly, even in CR patients, that it was not super robust in terms of single agent therapy. So I know this study has been amended and they are now adding chemotherapy such as dacarbazine and adriamycin to see how much do we need to treat these patients. We are almost finishing a study here in Boston and across the U.S. at several sites of sequential brentuximab vedotin, starting with that targeted therapy, followed by what we considered standard chemotherapy, and then finishing with maintenance or consolidation with additional brentuximab vedotin. Very preliminary, we presented at Lugano, but after brentuximab vedotin, you can see the response rates from two cycles, and then after chemotherapy, quite high remission rate and CR rate. We need longer follow-up, but of disease, or I should say of evaluable patients, you can see 95% were free of disease. Still some neuropathy that needs to be followed, but was definitely manageable. What about those checkpoint blockers I had alluded to? Quite exciting therapy. This is a cartoon looking at the PD-1 receptor on T cells, PD-L1 on tumor cells, and we know that there is important that tumors co-opt this and cause, in part, T cell exhaustion. So, thankfully, now we have medications that can block this receptor, PD-1. This was published by Steve Ansel in the New England Journal that of 23 patients, 78% who had prior BV and stem cell transplants had really a remarkable response rate of 87%, quite high. CR rate maybe not as robust at 17%, but really very exciting data nonetheless. Also, pembrolizumab data in the KEYNOTE-013 study altogether showed very similar data in terms of you can see across whether transplant ineligible or failure, high response rate, more modest CR rate. The other point with these two, going back to the prior study as well as this one, the median progression-free survival has been very impressive. At a median of over 100 weeks, still is not reached with the NIVO study. So we need longer follow-up, more numbers, but very exciting data, and these are quickly being integrated into frontline therapy. So in the last two slides, I'll talk about biomarkers. We were hoping that the early functional image PET scan was going to be that answer, but there might be some niches where we use it. I think we're looking at more and newer technology. One that I think is interesting, still not standard of care by any means, still research, is metabolic tumor burden. So in other words, not just a qualitative scan, which a PET scan in today's world is, but more quantitative. Can we quantitate the tumor burden? As you can see, not just by the volume of tumor, but the intensity, as this image does here. And this is delta SUV max and metabolic tumor burden can be measured, as well as total lesion glycolysis. And you can map this out. There was a Hodgkin lymphoma study published by colleagues at Stanford that showed that this was highly predictive. The metabolic tumor burden, as well as SUV max, all predicted progression-free survival and overall survival. So this will be interesting as we go along. What's also been important is looking at gene expression profiling of baseline tumor tissue in Hodgkin lymphoma. The British Columbia Cancer Agency has done outstanding work to this end. You can see gene expression profiling in the picture, as well as immunohistochemistry panels on the top, a patient with low amounts of macrophage on IHC and a patient with high levels of macrophages in their biopsy specimen. What did this translate to? Well, it was prognostic, showing that low macrophages patients had a good outcome, and patients who had high macrophages had a poorer outcome. So we would say this is definitely prognostic. Now, what we don't know, like PET scans, is this predictive? And hopefully studies will address this. In other words, now based on this, can you possibly increase therapy for patients with high macrophage or decrease therapy with low macrophage? Those studies will be interesting to design, and we await those. So overall summary for managing Hodgkin lymphoma in 2016, we know that early-stage Hodgkin lymphoma with chemotherapy or chemotherapy plus radiation, the high majority of patients are cured. I think it still is an individualized choice whether you administer combined modality therapy with radiation or chemotherapy alone. I think it still is evolving in terms of response-adapted therapy. We await more data looking at positive as well as negative response-adapted therapy in early stage as well as advanced stage. In my practice, the majority of patients for advanced stage will receive 6 cycles of ABVD. I will dose escalate to BICOP for an interim positive PET after 2 cycles, but we also anxiously await the brentuximab vedotin randomized data as well. Older patients certainly need modified therapy, and there are different regimens being looked at there, including incorporation of novel agents. And in closing, I think that is the most exciting part. I think we are poised over the next decade to find a cytotoxic-free regimen for patients, whether it's a combination of different novel targeted therapeutics. It definitely is an exciting time, and we need to continue to leverage the science in identifying truly predictive biomarkers, whether it's imaging, tissue-based, or a matrix of all of these. Definitely an exciting time in Hodgkin lymphoma. Thank you for viewing this activity. For additional resources, please view the other educational activities at managinghodgkinlymphoma.com.